So imagine you're building like a state-of-the-art artificial intelligence, something that can literally beat algorithms designed by Google engineers.
Right.
And you're doing it with fewer than 50 images and
Yeah.
just high school math.
Which sounds completely impossible based on what we usually hear.
Exactly. For a long time, the whole narrative around AI has been, pitched as this hyper-exclusive walled garden, like the bouncer at the door demands an advanced calculus degree and the receipt for your million-dollar supercomputer before you can even peek inside.
Yeah, and honestly, that's a narrative that heavily benefits the gatekeepers. I mean, it
Yeah.
creates this massive moat around the entire
Oh,
industry.
totally.
But the reality of applied modern machine learning is just radically different from that academic stereotype.
It really is. And welcome to today's deep dive, by the way. We are super thrilled you're joining us because we have a fascinating stack of sources to unpack for you today.
We really do.
Our mission here is to completely deconstruct the definitive guide and the accompanying 2022 course lectures for a book called Deep Learning for Coders with FastEye and PyTorch.
Which is an absolute masterwork by Jeremy Howard and Sylvain Gugger.
Yeah, we're going to explore how this material takes a programmer with like just 1 year of coding experience and turns them into a highly capable deep learning practitioner.
And we should probably clarify right up front, this isn't just some surface-level software manual.
Right.
It is a fundamental reimagining of technical pedagogy. Like, Howard and Gugger managed to take you from building a one-class computer vision model in just four lines of code on day one.
Just four lines.
Yeah, four lines. All the way down to writing the underlying matrix calculus of a neural network from absolute scratch by the end of the journey.
Which is wild. So let's start with how they shatter those barrier to entry myths, right?
Right.
If you were sitting there listening to this and thinking, well, I don't have the math background.
Right, the classic excuse.
Exactly. The book points out that standard high school algebra and, just a basic conceptual understanding of what a derivative is, that's all you actually need.
Yeah, and if you think you don't have enough data, they literally show you record-breaking classification results achieved with just handfuls of examples.
Handfuls. It's crazy.
And if compute power is your worry, they demonstrate how to use free cloud GPUs to do state-of-the-art work. So, the bottleneck keeping people out of AI isn't hardware or data.
What is it then?
It's how the subject is traditionally taught. The authors base their entire curriculum on this concept from Harvard professor David Perkins called Teaching the Whole Game.
Oh, I love this part. They cite Paul Lockhart's essay, A Mathematician's Lament, which it perfectly captures this whole idea.
It really does.
Because traditional computer science teaching is essentially like forcing a student to study sheet music and the mathematical theory of counterpoint and like the physics of acoustics for 10 years before you ever let them touch a guitar.
Right. And by the time they actually get to hold the instrument, all the passion is just gone.
Exactly. The alternative is handing the student a guitar on day one, showing them three chords and just playing a song together.
Which is so much better. And in the context of this material, playing the game in chapter one means using a neural network architecture called ResNet34 to train a highly accurate image classifier in a matter of minutes.
Okay, let's actually unpack the mechanics of how a beginner pulls that off, because I mean, it sounds like magic,
Sure
right?
does.
How do you bypass all that foundational training on day one? You do it through transfer learning.
Transfer learning is, I mean, it's arguably the most important concept in applied AI today.
Hands down.
Instead of starting with a neural network that has random, completely ignorant weights,
Yeah.
a model that knows absolutely nothing about the visual world, you start with a pre-trained model.
Right.
So ResNet34 has already been trained on over a million images from this massive data set called ImageNet.
Which basically means it has already done the brutal, computationally expensive work of learning how to see.
Exactly.
Like its first few layers have learned to detect basic gradients and diagonal lines.
Yeah.
And then the middle layers have learned to assemble those lines into corners and curves.
Yeah, and the later layers have learned to recognize like complex textures, eyeballs, fur, wheels, you name it.
And this is the absolute genius of the fine-tuning process. You take that brilliant visual savant and you mathematically chop off its final layer.
The one that spits out the thousand specific ImageNet categories.
Right, you chop that off and you
Sure.
glue on a new randomized final layer that corresponds to your specific categories. Like maybe you want to classify healthy versus diseased crop leaves.
Yeah.
You are only training that final layer while you're preserving the millions of parameters of visual understanding it already possesses.
So you're basically standing on the shoulders of massive computing clusters from line one.
Exactly. But this brings us to the actual environment you're working in. Because since you already know your way around writing code, you've probably used a Jupyter notebook.
Oh, yeah, they are fantastic.
They really are. They're these interactive scratch pads where you can run a cell of code, look at a visualization, and write some markdown text all in the exact same document.
But Howard and Gugger do something totally unprecedented here. I mean, they didn't just write the book in Jupyter Notebooks.
Right.
They wrote their entire production-grade software library, which is called FastEye, entirely inside notebooks.
Which violates almost every traditional rule of software engineering.
It really does.
Usually, libraries are buried in these massive nested directories of standard Python files. But by building it this way, the source code is completely exposed and interactive.
Yeah, you can literally read the documentation, see the unit test, and execute the core logic in the exact same view. It completely democratizes the source code.
It does. But we need to talk about what that code actually is. The FastEye library sits on top of PyTorch.
Right, PyTorch, the heavyweight industry standard tensor library developed by Meta.
Exactly. It is incredibly powerful, but it is also highly verbose, and it kind of forces the developer to write a whole lot of boilerplate code.
Tons of boilerplate.
So let me push back on the necessity of FastEye, though. Because if PyTorch is the industry standard and every major research lab uses it, why should a developer bother learning a wrapper library?
That's a fair question.
Doesn't relying on FastEye just put like training wheels on your workflow that you're eventually going to have to take off anyway?
Well, that assumes the architecture is rigid, which is a total misunderstanding of how the authors design their layered API.
Okay, how so?
FastEye isn't a walled-off, dumbed-down version of PyTorch. It's basically a collection of best practices baked into executable code.
Gotcha.
In the 2022 course lectures, Jeremy Howard gives this brilliant demonstration of this using an optimizer called Atom W.
Oh, I loved this part. Atom W is a specific algorithm used to update the weights of a neural network during training, particularly handling something called weight decay.
Right, and when you write Atom W in pure PyTorch, it is a massive, hairy block of state management and decoupled parameter updates.
That's terrifying to look at.
It is, and if a developer messes up a single mathematical operation in there, the code won't even throw an error.
Wait, it won't crash?
No, it will still run. It will just silently train 10 times slower and achieve much worse results.
Wow, a silent failure is literally a developer's worst nightmare.
It is the absolute worst. But the FastEye equivalent of that massive PyTorch block is literally a single line of code.
Just one line.
One line. FastEye automatically incorporates the latest academic research, like finding the optimal learning rate or handling momentum totally behind the scenes. So you write less code, make fewer mistakes, and hit state-of-the-art benchmarks way faster.
But the crucial part of that layered API is that the training wheels are completely optional, right? Like the moment you need to do something highly custom, maybe you're researching a brand new loss function, you just bypass the high-level FastEye function and drop seamlessly into pure PyTorch. The entire stack is right there and accessible.
Which is what allows this single ecosystem to stretch across completely different types of data. The first half of the curriculum is basically a masterclass in applying this API to the major domains of deep learning, and they start with computer vision.
And it goes way beyond just classifying cats and dogs, you know. The mechanics they introduce are fascinating.
Oh, definitely.
Take presizing, for example. When you're training a vision model, you want to augment your data by rotating, zooming, and skewing your images so the model doesn't just like memorize the training set.
Right, but if you do those mathematical transformations sequentially, you introduce destructive interpolation.
Destructive interpolation. Sounds bad.
It is. Every time you rotate or zoom an image, you lose pixel fidelity. The image basically gets blurrier and blurrier.
So the book teaches you to handle this by resizing images to a relatively large dimension first. Then you compose all of your complex augmentations into one single mathematical matrix.
Yeah, and then you apply that matrix on the GPU in one single high-speed calculation before cropping it to the final size.
It's such a massive boost to both image quality and computational speed.
It's brilliant. And that same attention to the underlying mechanics applies when they shift from visual data to language.
Right, natural language processing or NLP.
Yeah. NLP requires taking raw, messy human text and converting it into a mathematical format that a neural network can actually process.
Because you can't just feed the word unbelievable into a matrix multiplication. It doesn't work.
No, it doesn't. And the traditional approach was assigning a unique ID number to every single word in the dictionary. But the book dives into subword tokenization, which is so much more elegant.
Right, because subword tokenization breaks that word down into chunks, like unbelieve and able.
Exactly. It gives the neural network a structural understanding of prefixes and suffixes, which allows it to guess the meaning of words it has never actually seen before.
Which is crazy when you think about it. Now, in the book, they build text classifiers using recurrent neural networks, or RNNs.
Yeah, that was the standard for a bit.
But in the updated 2022 lectures, they completely pivot to integrate Hugging Face transformers. They acknowledge that the architecture underlying models like GPT has basically become the new state of the art.
And they show you how fine-tuning a massive language model is mechanically identical to fine-tuning that image classifier we talked about earlier.
It's all the same underlying concepts, but you know, language and images get all the press because they're very visible to the public.
Oh, totally. They're flashy.
But then the curriculum pivots to the data format that actually runs the global economy.
Tabular data.
Tabular data. Spreadsheets and relational databases.
Yes. And this is where the author's pragmatism really shines. They don't fall into the trap of forcing deep learning onto every single problem.
Thank goodness.
If you are trying to predict next quarter's inventory based on a spreadsheet, they explicitly teach you to start with traditional machine learning.
Right, like they walk you through building random forests and decision trees using standard libraries like Pandas and Scikit-learn.
Yeah, because an ensemble of decision trees is incredibly fast to train, it doesn't require a fancy GPU, and it provides excellent baseline accuracy for tabular data.
But when your spreadsheet contains highly complex categorical data, say zip codes or product IDs that just don't have a simple numerical relationship, that's when they teach you to wire in neural network into the process.
Using embeddings?
Using embeddings, yes.
Embeddings are such a profound concept. An embedding is essentially a mathematical lookup table. It translates a categorical variable like Sunday or user ID 45 into a rich multidimensional vector of continuous numbers.
Which sounds complicated, but it allows the neural network to learn the nuanced hidden relationships between those categories during the training process.
Exactly. And understanding embeddings provides the perfect bridge into the final application domain they cover, which is collaborative filtering.
Recommendation systems.
Yep. It's the engine behind them. It's the math that allows Netflix to guess what movie you want to watch next, or Amazon to suggest a product you didn't even know you wanted.
And collaborative filtering relies on learning what are known as latent factors. I think the best way to visualize latent factors is to think of them as like the hidden DNA of a user's taste.
That's a great way to put it.
Because let's say you have a massive matrix of users and the movies they've rated. The neural network doesn't actually know what a 1990s action movie is.
Right. It has no concept of genre or directors or release decades.
It only sees the mathematical patterns of user interactions.
Yes.
Through the process of adjusting its embedding vectors to minimize prediction errors, the network secretly discovers that user A and user B both consistently highly rate a specific cluster of films.
So it basically invents a latent DNA trait, a hidden variable that correlates perfectly with 90s action movies entirely on its own.
Nobody ever labeled a data that way. The math just found the hidden structure of human preference.
It's mind-blowing, but harnessing that kind of predictive power introduces some severe real-world vulnerabilities.
It really does. Which brings us to a major pivot in the curriculum. Because training a model in a pristine Jupyter notebook is only half the battle.
Barely half. Chapter 2 introduces the drivetrain approach. This emphasizes that a mathematical model is completely useless if it isn't deployed to drive a specific action.
Right. The drivetrain approach forces you to define your objective first. Then you identify the levers you can actually pull to affect that objective.
And only then do you gather data and build the model to tell you how to pull those levers.
It's all about transitioning from a theoretical data scientist to a practical software engineer deploying a working web application.
But deploying models into production is where things get really dangerous. Chapter 3 is dedicated entirely to data ethics, and it treats ethical failures not as like philosophical debates, but as critical engineering bugs.
The examples they pull from the real world are genuinely chilling. The book points out the mechanics of feedback loops, using recommendation systems as a prime example.
Yeah.
If your system's objective function is mathematically tuned to maximize watch time, the algorithm will quickly discover that highly polarized, extreme content is the most effective lever to keep human eyeballs glued to the screen.
Right. The model is flawlessly executing its mathematical optimization, but systemically, it's generating a totally destructive societal feedback loop.
They also examine algorithmic bias. They highlight the case of Professor Latanya Sweeney. She is a prominent researcher who discovered a massive flaw in search engine ad networks.
This is a wild story.
It is. When she searched her own name, which is a name statistically associated with Black individuals, mm-hmm. the search engine consistently served up advertisements implying she had an arrest record.
Wow.
Yeah. But when traditionally white-sounding names were searched, those specific background check ads almost never appeared.
And the curriculum stance on this is completely unyielding. You know, you cannot just patch these blind spots after the fact.
So how do we prevent this?
Well, the authors argue that machine learning must be integrated with product design from day one. You have to specifically design systems for human recourse.
Meaning, if the algorithm makes a mistake, how does a user appeal it?
Exactly. Furthermore, they argue that homogeneous engineering teams are a fundamental security risk.
Right. If everyone in the room has the exact same background, they will fundamentally fail to ask the right questions of the data because they haven't lived the experiences that the algorithm might negatively impact. Makes total sense. So we've covered the high-level tools, the data domains, and the severe necessity of robust system design. But, you know, to truly build safe, effective models and to possess the skills to fix them when they inevitably break in production, you can't just be a tourist relying on Fast-Eye's high-level magic.
Definitely not. You have to become a mechanic. And this is the brilliant narrative arc of the book, because the second half completely deconstructs everything you learned in the first half.
It's incredible pedagogy. I think of it like this. On day one, the authors toss you the keys to a Ferrari. They say, take it for a spin. Feel the acceleration. See what this machine can do.
I love that analogy.
Right. You spend the first half of the course joyriding through state-of-the-art results. But then they pull you back into the garage. And for the rest of the year, they force you to slowly take the engine apart, piece by piece, bolt by bolt, until you understand exactly how combustion works.
And that combustion is the underlying math. In parts 3 and 4, the curriculum strips away all the abstractions. You unpack what an image actually is at the memory level.
Which is just grids of numbers formatted as NumPy arrays and PyTorch tensors.
Exactly. And then you tackle the absolute engine of deep learning, which is stochastic gradient descent, or SGD.
SGD sounds super intimidating, but they break it down into purely mechanical steps. A neural network is basically just a massive mathematical function with millions of adjustable parameters, or weights.
Right. When you feed an image through it, it makes a guess. SGD is just the process of measuring how wrong that guess is using a loss function.
Like cross entropy, which heavily penalizes the model when it is confidently wrong.
Yeah. And once you know how wrong you are, you calculate the gradient. The gradient is just calculus telling you the exact direction you need to nudge every single weight to make the next guess slightly better.
You take a step in that direction, the size of which is dictated by your learning rate, and then you just repeat the process. Forward pass, calculate loss, calculate gradients, update weights, millions of times.
And the climax of this journey is profoundly satisfying for a developer. The book actually guides you to build a neural network layer from scratch, using nothing but basic Python.
Wow, so no built-in PyTorch neural network modules at all.
None. You manually program the matrix multiplications. You code the element-wise arithmetic for the activation functions, like ReLUs.
You even write the code to manually calculate the forward pass and the backward pass using the calculus chain rule, distributing the error back through your custom layers.
Yeah. And as the ultimate flex, they walk you through rebuilding the high-level FastEye Learner class itself from scratch.
That is so cool. By the time you finish the material, the AI is no longer a black box. You built the box.
You built it. It completely demystifies the technology. It transitions the reader from being an end user of AI to an architect.
Zooming out, deep learning for coders is just far more than a textbook. It is a systematic dismantling of academic gatekeeping. It proves that you don't need a theoretical mathematics background to be a highly effective AI practitioner.
It provides the high-level abstractions to get things done quickly, the structural awareness to deploy things safely, and the deep mathematical foundation to know exactly what the code is doing.
It empowers the domain expert. It means the biologist, the journalist, the logistics manager, they can all apply state-of-the-art AI directly to their own specific problems, rather than waiting for centralized big tech companies to build solutions for them. Well, I want to leave you with a final thought to ponder today. And it ties directly back to how this information was delivered. We talked earlier about how Howard and Gugger wrote this entire 600-page curriculum and the entirety of the FastEye software library inside executing Jupyter Notebooks.
Right. They completely blurred the lines between static prose, raw data, and living, breathing code.
It fundamentally changes the medium of knowledge transfer. Think about what that means for the future of human learning.
It's massive.
Our static PDFs and traditional, unchangeable textbooks, already an obsolete technology for teaching the next generation of complex science.
It's a great question.
If you haven't yet, I highly recommend exploring Jupyter Notebooks for your own projects and rethinking how you share your work. Think back to that walled garden we talked about at the beginning. If the blueprint to get inside is a living document that you can execute, break, and modify on your own laptop,
then those walls aren't actually real anymore.
The gatekeepers have left the building. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Go build something amazing.